broadcasting live from downtown San Francisco. This is the Greg Papa Show on the Bay Area Sports Station, 95.7 The Game.
They're the best team in the league.
They were the defending champion Washington Redskins. In Week 5, they hosted the Raiders in one of the greatest regular season games in NFL history. The Redskins' Joe Washington had the biggest impact. Washington sparked a Redskins comeback with a 67-yard gain on a screen pass and also scored the game-winning touchdown with seconds remaining.
Heisman, three receivers to the far side. Throws it over the middle.
Little delay to Thompson. Got a nice block, and it springs into the open field. Thompson inside the 20. And a touchdown for Thompson.
Yeah, it's just because of the numeral 25, I think a lot of it is. But it's just the skill set is remarkably similar to Joe Washington, who Joe Theismann is going to join us coming up in moments here on the Afternoon Delight with Pop and Vontae, 95.7 The Game. And, you know, Joe had John Riggins as the big guy, and they brought in Joe Washington, who was in Baltimore earlier in his career, had one of the greatest Monday night games in the history of Monday night football when he was a Colt in the rain. I think it was in Foxborough against the Patriots. And, you know, they used him so beautifully out of the backfield. And you look at the Washington Redskins right now, and Chris Thompson, Vontae, is... He's the second coming of Joe Washington, and whether it's a rocket screen like they threw it, you know, when Coach Gibbs was there and Joe Buglia the offensive line, you know, he's they used him more on the, you know, traditional screens, but this guy just runs routes over the middle, and he's been the biggest weapon, I think, on the Washington Redskins team right now. He has scored Chris Thompson three of their four offensive touchdowns. Ryan Kerrigan also has a pick six for a score against Carson Wentz, and he's had a couple of rushing and one receiving. He leads the team in all-purpose yards, 196 in the two games, and that's just the area where the Raider defense has not proven that they can actually, you know, match up with a guy like Chris Thompson. But I think his ears are burning. We're going to bring in the great Joe Theismann, one of the great Redskins of all time, on the Afternoon Delight with Pop and Vontae here on 95.7 The Game. Welcome back, Joe. And I've been comparing Chris Thompson to your guy, Joe Washington. Maybe it's because of the 25 on the jersey in burgundy, but do you see any similarities to Chris Thompson to your guy in the rocket sweeper, the screener, Joe Washington years ago, Joe?
Tremendous comparisons, and I apologize for being a little bit late. I was pulling weeds, and time got away from me.
So, Joe Theismann pulling weeds? Don't you have upstairs butler that does that for you or something? Come on.
No, the downstairs butler usually does, but he's off today. No, actually, you know something, Greg? It really is. It's quite an amazing comparison. As a matter of fact, the angle routes, the one that Chris dropped, the run that he made and then the one he dropped that probably would have been another touchdown against the Rams are the routes that Joe Washington used to run for us. They're option routes where he can go inside or outside depending upon what he manages to be able to do with the linebacker or safety that's covering. But there are similarities. They're both actually very good inside runners. I mean, people look at Chris's size and they looked at Joe's size and they figured, man, these guys are just perimeter runners. Both of them actually are very good inside runners. As a matter of fact, Joe Washington preferred to run inside where the trees are so that he can maneuver his way to the second level. So, yeah, I would absolutely agree with you 100%. There's tremendous comparison.
Yeah, and just watching the Redskins play last week against the Rams, I thought Joe Buglia was calling the offensive line calls and Coach Gibbs was there and you were under center. I saw so much of the old counter tray where I see the right tackle and the right guard pulling and getting out the backside. Because we know Jay Gruden being John's brother, being more of a guy who likes to throw the ball. But I saw a lot of good things in the Redskin run game last Sunday, Joe.
It was. There were a lot of good things. And it's funny you mention that because when I was at the game and I was sitting there with Mr. Snyder, and I looked at Dan and I thought to myself, you know what, these are reminiscences of when I had the opportunity to play behind these guys. The offensive line is athletic. Morgan Moses is a lot more athletic than people think at the right tackle position. Certainly Trent Williams, one of the most athletic guys in football. Brandon Scherff, the right guard, can do the same things that basically Russ Grimm could do. But yeah, there were similarities. And Jay has made a conscientious effort this year to want to run the football, to create some balance. Kirk Cousins threw for almost 5,000 yards last year. I made the prediction in the beginning of the year, and I still hold to it. I'd be surprised if he gets to 4,500. I think the Redskins want to be able to control the game a bit more by running the football. They have the guys up front, and they look like they're ready to go now. The first game, they looked very lethargic and uncertain of themselves. Of course, that's what you get coming out of preseason. But no, I was quite impressed with the way Jay called both games and the execution the guys did in this one.
Yeah, during the regular season, he's sitting in the owner's suite with Daniel Snyder. Throughout the preseason, he's broadcasting the games on TV along with Kenny Albert, one of the great Redskins of all time, MVP of the 83 season, a Super Bowl MVP from the year before. Joe Theismann back on the Afternoon Delight with Pop and Vonta here on 95.7 The Game. Tell me about Kirk Cousins, what you see from him, and just the whole contract issue the last couple of years and franchise tagging him. Maybe it's a statement of how contracts are done in the NFL. Do you see him staying long-term with the Redskins? There's a lot of rumors about Kyle Shanahan, you know, Mike's son, maybe making a play to get him at some point. Tell me what you see from Kirk Cousins, Joe.
I see the same thing this year that I saw the last 2 years. I see a guy who's consistent, who has a high completion percentage. The one thing he needs to work on is protecting the football when the team is in a scoring area. He had some problems with it a year ago, had some problems in Philadelphia with it. He's becoming more athletic, running with the football, making plays outside the pocket, which is something he talked about. He wanted to try and do a little bit more. The thing about Kirk's situation, and this is what people have to understand, is after Derek Carr signed his contract, I thought Kirk would sign before Matthew Stafford. And on May 2nd, the Redskins offered Kirk, at that time, the most guaranteed money to a quarterback in the entire league. He turned it down. As a matter of fact, he didn't turn it down. He and his representatives never responded to the Redskins. So everybody says, hey, what are the Redskins trying to do? Why are they doing this? Because Kirk has made the decision that he wanted to play under the franchise tag this year and create himself some options for next year. And Greg, we know this. Kyle Shanahan wants him bad. The 49ers were $63 million, I believe, under the cap this year. Kyle wants him bad. But then what about the Arizona Cardinals? What are they going to do? What about the Jets? What are they going to do? You know, is Cleveland content with what they have there in Cleveland? There are half a dozen teams in the National Football League that would take Kirk Cousins right now. The question is, Kirk is going to sit, this is what I believe, Kirk is going to sit down and hopefully he goes through the season healthy and has a terrific year. He's going to sit down and he's going to look at the landscape and he's going to say, which football team can I go to that gives me a chance to win in the playoffs, possibly get where I want and put a ring on my finger? What's the supporting cast look like around me? I can tell you this. When you look at all those other teams in the National Football League, the best supporting cast that he has is in Washington, D.C., and that's why I believe he will make the decision to stay there. Because the number is going to be somewhere between $120 and $135 million. That's a given. You know, what are the Indianapolis Colts doing now with Andrew Luck? $98 million or so guaranteed, and you're not sure he's going to play football this year. And you're not sure what's going on because right shoulders are tremendously sensitive issues. So, you know, where is the guarantee? And I believe the best fit for Kirk would be where he is, having been in the system. And I believe with the players around him, give him the best opportunity to win.
Yeah, that's funny. You mentioned all those teams, Joe, and I even look at Houston, even though they have Deshaun Watson down there, they still need a quarterback. I don't believe you. And that may be a good supporting cast with that defense down in Houston.
No, that
Texas.
Would not happen. They're going to live with Deshaun down there. Houston, to me, wouldn't even be a thought.
Yeah, after striking out on Brock Osweiler, I could see that. Let's talk about this Washington defense. It's going to be a good matchup against the Oakland Raiders. They're very balanced, run game, pass game. How do you think they'll use Josh Norman? Will they, you know, have him shadow this week, Amari Cooper, Crabtree? How do you think they'll play this Raiders offense, Joe?
I don't necessarily see them putting Josh on Amari one-on-one across the field. I think they have a confidence in Breland. I think Rashard has shown some really good cover skills all through training camp, all through the preseason, as well as into the first two games. So I think they have the confidence in Rashard right now that if Amari lines up in front of them, they're okay with it. The big thing is going to be able to control the running game. The Raiders, you know, I looked at the three best offensive lines in football were the Dallas Cowboys, the Oakland Raiders, and the Washington Redskins going into the season. So you got two of the better offensive lines. The whole thing is what happens with Marshawn Lynch. Are they going to be able to control the game enough to force Derek Carr to drop back on 3rd and 11, 3rd and 10, 3rd and 8? or is it going to be a constant chess match between Greg Minuski and that offense at third and four? Now, the Redskins, you don't want to face a whole lot of third and fours, third and threes against the Oakland Raiders. So I think the key, as it always will be in the National Football League, it lies with the five guys up front on offense and the six or five that play on the defensive side of the ball. And, you know, our defense is playing much better football than it did a year ago.
And he played, he had the Hogs in front of him, and now the Washington Redskins have the great Trent Williams in left tackle. We're joined by one of the great Redskins of all time, Joe Theismann, back on the Afternoon Delight with Pop and Vontae here at 95.7 The Game. So you're going to rank the Redskins O-line with the Raiders and Cowboys O-line. Trent Williams, speak a little about him. I haven't seen him. We haven't played the Redskins in 4 years, Joe. I'd forgotten how great he is in space. But you were talking about Morgan Moses, the right tackle, being athletic. I see him playing high sometimes and just getting beat around the edge with a speed rusher, and he's going to get Khalil Mack on Sunday night, Joe.
You're right. I mean, the thing is he's going to have to drop his bottom a little bit more. I mean, but he's always played high. The thing he can offset that with is these long arms of his. I mean, Morgan's going to have to get on his skates a bit with Khalil. I know J.J. Watt is a great pass rusher, but, you know, Khalil Mack, to me, is right there. I mean, pick your poison if you want to call the best pass rusher in football one of those two guys. I really feel like Morgan has come a long way. Trent got beat on the outside a couple times in Philly, had the same issue happen against the Rams. I think they're going to have to protect the corners better than they have, because Kirk's not necessarily going to take off and go anywhere. You know, they basically operate out of the pocket. That's what the Redskins do. Maybe they move them a little bit more. I'm not sure. I certainly would consider it. But, you know, Morgan does. He's so tall. And, you know, his lower body is different than Trent's. Trent's about 2 inches shorter, it looks like anyway. But his girth below it is a little bit more stout. Morgan's just a tall guy. But like I said, he makes up for it with such great arm length and pop. So it'll be a great match. There's going to be some terrific matchups as this game goes on Sunday night.
So you were talking about the weapons that Kirk Cousins has around him, as good as any team in football. Speak to some of those weapons. And, you know, Jordan Reed, I think, is one of the guys that clearly has been his number one target. Just doesn't seem like he's moving well. You did the preseason games with Kenny when he wasn't playing. He comes back, and I don't think he moved as well against the Eagles, and now he's got a rib or a sternum injury after the Rand game. Where is Jordan Reed at physically right now? Do you think he'll play on Sunday night?
I think he'll try and play on Sunday. But how effective will he be? I mean, he's had recurring issues, hamstrings, ankles, shoulders, sternum. You know, that's been – you're talking about a really, really pure talent that can't stay healthy. And that's why the Vernon Davis signing was so important to the Redskins. They can do some things with Vernon Davis. He doesn't quite have the shake that Jordan does. But Vernon will help him out tremendously, and they don't have to lose a lot when it comes to working to the tight end in the passing game. He's got great speed. He's got terrific hands, probably a little bit better blocker, although that's not one of the strengths of what the Redskins do with their tight ends. I think the area where they've, you know, and they didn't throw the ball a lot to the wide receivers against the Rams. They basically focused on Chris Thompson, and they focused on Jordan Reed. And, you know, Terrell Pryor's in his second year as a wide receiver. He's a tall guy, so it's different for guys 6'5", 6'6". The low balls become issues for them because they have to bend over. You think you have a catch radius, so you throw it a little bit higher, and it forces little mental games with the quarterback. And Josh Dobson just hasn't played football. I mean, he played the game, but he was non-existent except for one play in the last game. He needs to be visible in this game. He's going to have to step up and make plays. The Redskins lost DeSean Jackson, and they lost Pierre Garçon. 2,000-yard receivers. And they replaced them with a young man who's yet to really play football and another one who's just learning. Now, it's not to say that in time both Terrell and Josh can become very effective, but right now it's a learning process. And this is a tough league to go through the learning process in.
Yeah, Terrell Pryor is trying to make the really interesting conversion from college quarterback, NFL quarterback, to NFL wide receiver. Joining us on the Afternoon Delight is Joe Theismann, one of the great Redskins of all time. But before he played with the Redskins, he went to the CFL, played with the Argos, the Toronto Argonauts. And I remember you running back punts when you first got in the league. You were such a great athlete. But speak to what Terrell Pryor is being asked to do. I go back to Marlon Briscoe, you know, with the Broncos in the AFL in the late 60s, Joe, and then he came to Buffalo and was a good receiver, then went to Miami on their undefeated team. Outside of Marlon, I can't think of too many guys that have had to make this kind of a transformation from quarterback and playing it in the NFL and being a great, you know, college quarterback at Ohio State. He won a lot of games. Terrell Pryor, he is big. He seems a little sloppy in his route running. He's dropped some balls. Where is Terrell Pryor at, Joe, in his conversion from quarterback to wide receiver?
Well, you know, it's interesting, Greg. I think there's a couple other guys, too. Tony Martin made the transition also in Miami Dolphin. And then great Julian Edelman. You know, we forget Julian was actually a quarterback in college, too.
Yeah.
But the slot is a different world. Yeah, all through the OTAs, all through the mini camps, all through training camp, Terrell Pryor did not miss a practice. He would go out early, and he would catch balls from the jugs machine. He would catch 50 balls, at least 60 balls. He'd catch them with one hand. He'd catch them with two hands. He'd catch them in front of him. He'd catch them behind him. He is working so hard on a skill that he is trying to learn. I mean, he was in Oakland as a quarterback. He was there. People know what his athletic skills are, but it's an entirely different world for a tall receiver. You know, tall guys, let's Julio Jones as an example, is a tall receiver with the skills of a six-footer. You know, Terrell is a tall receiver converting to receiver with the skills of a guy that is still learning what his body can do, still learning to catch the ball in traffic. Now, last year he played with five different quarterbacks in Cleveland, still managed 1,000 yards and 77 catches, but he was the only guy that caught the football. And think of it, you know, if you're a shooter in basketball, And you don't hit the shots right away. People keep feeding you, and then all of a sudden you hit a rhythm. With Terrell, if you're going to get seven balls a game thrown to you, which is a pretty good amount, you can't drop him. He has in preseason. He has in the other game. The opportunities aren't there like they were in Cleveland, where he was truly the only guy that they could build into the offense. Now it's Terrell. It's really. Jordan Reed, one. Chris Thompson, 1A. And then you get to Terrell. And then you get to Josh. And you're Vernon. So the ball is being spread around in a lot of different places. And the opportunities are minimal. And you have to capitalize on them. And putting the ball on the ground in key situations is something you can't do. It's like Kirk. You know, when Kirk gets in the red zone, the interception he threw against the Eagles, that was a critical time in the game. You know, if you come away with three, you're still ahead. It changes the game's momentum completely. So, you know, guys have to keep on making plays, and they did in the Ram game. You know, like I say, one got away from Chris, or that'd have been a 65-yard touchdown. He'd had just as many yards receiving probably as Antonio Brown has in the league, and he caught that.
Joe Theismann joining us on the afternoon delight, going through the Redskins wide receivers with Terrell Pryor, Jamison Crowder, Ryan Grant, the young guy Doxon. We talked about the tight ends. And you mentioned, Joe, you know, losing DeSean Jackson now in Tampa Bay. And Pierre Garçon is now a 49er. They're going to play a Thursday night game tonight in town against the L.A. Rams. You know Garçon well. Hell, 1 year, 2013, he caught 113 passes to lead the league at over 1,300 yards, 12 yards a catch. He had a lot of good years in Washington. Tell me about his skill set. How should Kyle Shanahan use Pierre Garçon this year?
I think Pierre Garçon is the trigger for emotion on a football team. He plays nasty. He plays tough. He doesn't try and avoid contact. He takes it on. He's a trendsetter. Guys get excited. When Pierre gets his hands on the ball and he starts running, there's a collision that's going to occur. And he's probably going to come out on top in the collision. I always believed in the last couple, 3 years, if we got the ball early to Pierre, it would be sort of a tempo setter for the game, because he brings such toughness there. I promise you, Kyle will get the ball to him early in this game. He has to. He knows it, because Kyle called plays when he had him before. He knows his skill set. He's going to be a 65, 75 catch guy with about six, seven touchdown passes. I mean, that's basically going to be, I would think, the numbers at the end of the year. But he's going to, you throw him a hitch, he's going to get not five, he's going to get eight. Or he could break it. You throw a post to him down around the goal line, he's going to get his body in front of it and take any hit that any safety wants to give him. I've always believed that getting him involved early sets the tempo and temperament of what a football team wants to be on offense.
Yeah, he's a tough guy and he's difficult to
tackle. I thought he was going to be the one they would keep. Of the two that left, I thought Pierre would be the one they might have considered keeping. But, you know, Deshaun has a skill set that you just can't find. I mean, there aren't too many guys in this league can just flat take the top off of defense. Tariq Hill in Kansas City, and you see what speed can do. Cooks in New England is another one. Antonio is another one. You know, maybe half a dozen guys in this league that when you line up and you get too close, you know, all you're going to be looking at is their name running past you.
So good to talk to Joe Theismann, especially with the Raiders and Redskins set to go on Sunday night. He gave us about 20 good minutes. Are you going back to your weeds now, Joe?
I've got one more bed to do.
trying to visualize Joe Theismann pulling out weeds in the yard.
Can you Instagram it?
I use a knee pad, so I don't hurt my knee.
Can you tweet this out? We need photo evidence of this, Joe.
I'll have Robin take a picture of me weeding. Yeah. That way you'll know.
Thank you, my friend. We'll see you on Sunday night when the Raiders and Redskins go at FedEx. Thanks, Joe.
Thanks, guys. Talk to you later. Bye-bye.
Thanks, Joe.
I'm still bitter
about the 1983 NFC Championship. Did I bring it up last time? I was 1 year old. I was spitting out Similac in my crib, Pop. Still pissed off about that pass interference call. That
I know you were thinking that.
Fraudulent. I was thinking about it the whole time. By the way,
Raiders-Niners. Yeah. Could have been
Raiders-Niners in Tampa Bay, and Al Davis did beat up on the 49ers when he had a chance. By the way, we missed one on the PiskeyAutoSales.com text line. I forgot about this, too. Antoine Randall-L. Remember him? He was a quarterback in Indiana.
No, but I'm talking about a guy who played quarterback in the NFL.
Yeah, I guess.
A lot of guys have made the conversion.
Cordell Stewart.
Matt Jones,
from Arkansas.
No, I'm talking about Terrell Pryor played quarterback in this league. It's not, and a lot of guys have made the conversion from college quarterback to pro wide receiver. It's that Terrell, and I didn't think he'd play quarterback, but the Raiders had him. He had a long, we'll pick him down tomorrow. He had that long touchdown run against Troy Polamalu and the Pittsburgh Steelers. I mean, I think he's the only guy to have 1,000 yards passing and 1,000 yards receiving in 1 year in the NFL, with the exception of Marlon Brisco. Marlon Brisco, African-American quarterback, the first for the Broncos in the late 60s, and I saw him in Buffalo with J.D. Hill, and that wide receiver room went on to Miami and won a Super Bowl with them. But, I mean, you're talking about a guy who played quarterback in the NFL, not a college quarterback, but an NFL quarterback and made the conversion to NFL wide receiver.
Yeah, that's true. Good call there. Good, because there is a lot of college quarterbacks. I remember Hines Ward playing quarterback at Georgia, but he was strictly a receiver in the NFL. But let's talk about this game tonight, Pop. The Rams defensive front with Aaron Donald. He's back in L.A. playing for the Rams and Wade Phillips versus this 49ers offensive line. We'll discuss that matchup here on the Greg Papa Show. I'm Bonte Hill, and this is 95.7 The Game.
The Greg Papa Show continues on 95.7 The Game.
Newton going to throw. Pressure up the middle. Hit and set. There's your guy. Second sack of the game for Aaron Donald. He's a special player. That's his fourth sack of the year. And he plays like he's got 40. And his game is built on power. Tolzien did not see the rush of Quinn. A sack for Robert Quinn.
That's the mighty Quinn, as John Gruden called him. I'm not so sure he's a 3-4 outside linebacker. I think he could run at that guy. But the voice I heard on the Aaron Donald sack, Monte, sounds a lot like the general manager of the 49ers. Right?
That does sound familiar.
John Lynch. I miss rings him on a bell. Broadcasting already. It's like Steve Kerr. I miss him. Aaron Donald is back, and they're getting ready for the Rams and 49ers tonight. You're not going down to the game tonight, are you?
No, I'm stuck here until about 9 o'clock, so I'm going to be watching the Niners from the Sports Hub, Oh,
that's a good place to watch.
Not bad. I prefer either being on my couch in the living room by myself, drinking a little brown liquor and going crazy, but
you could do that there in the Sports Hub.
I guess I could do that in the Sports Hub.
All right, we'll break it down tomorrow at 10 o'clock. We are going to be at the Warriors facility, the Racton Performance Center, tomorrow morning in Oakland, and we'll have Steve Kerr and Bob Myers right away the first hour, then later Andre Iguodala, Kevin Durant. I got to make my Raiders Redskins bet since they're playing this Sunday, and he's a big Redskin fan. And also Stephen Curry. So we have a busy show, but we'll recap the Rams and the 49ers tonight in detail tomorrow at 10 when we greet you. So the obvious weakness of the 49er team, and there are a lot of areas you're concerned about, is the interior three on the offensive line. Joe Staley's Joe Staley. Trent Brown is just a mauler, huge guy. I'm not sure he's getting this, you know, outside zone scheme. I think they're running more power. And they might tonight right at Mark Barron, but they got to get Aaron Donald blocked tonight.
Good luck.
Now, I think since they've gone to the change of Zane Beadles, who's more of an outside zone guy, doesn't hold up in the run game. We know him from Denver for years there, to Laken Tomlinson, who's just a monster. I don't mind that matchup. I think Tomlinson against Donald will be interesting. But the other guys, Daniel Kilgore at center, Brandon Fusco at right guard. And the beauty about Donald, sometimes it's not advantageous to double team him because he's so good at splitting a double team. And I saw the Redskins try to double him last week, and he went right through the double team. If you don't seal and get together on that double team and you leave him any crack, he will just go right through the double team. He is so powerful. I saw him get a sack basically one-handed. So I'm not going to say he's better than Khalil Mack or Von Miller. He's different because he's an inside guy, and Gerald McCoy is really good. But I would say he is the most dominant inside force in the NFL since J.J. Watt is a great player, but he's more of a, you know, he plays in a 34, and they've changed their front. I think he was more effective when they ran a 4-3 and they had the Mighty Quinn, and they've got Michael Brockers on the team as well, Monte, and they also had Chris Long when he was still Chris Long. A little bit different in the 3-4, but they let him, Wade Phillips lets him to get up the field and just wreak havoc. So can they block Aaron Donald tonight's my question.
Nobody can block Aaron Donald. And by the way, do you think Aaron Donald, most explosive D tackle since Warren Sapp maybe, or John Lynch, or where is he ranked there? But Laken Tomlinson.
J.J. Watt.
J.J. Watt, yeah. Laken Tomlinson,
I'd say the big guy that left Philly and went to Green Bay.
Oh, Reggie White. Yeah, the Reverend.
The late, great Reggie White. Yeah. He would be in that kind of category.
He was a stud.
Last year when the Rams came in, didn't Aaron Donald blow a gasket? He got kicked out of the game, remember?
He did, yeah. He did get kicked out.
He went
nuts. They were going to get beat by the 49ers.
I know, but he lost his mind.
He did.
He lost his way.
He did lose his way.
He got kicked out of that game, remember last
year?
Yeah,
he did lose his way. It reminds me of Charles Haley down at the L.A. Coliseum when the Raiders beat the Niners, and Ronnie Lott had to go into the other locker room and calm him down. Say, Charles, chill. But Laken Tomlinson, why do you think Detroit quit on him last week? Because what I saw from him last week up there in Seattle, Pop, I was very, very impressed. This guy is big. He's huge. He was getting off the ball. I saw him pancake Wagner on a couple plays on that big run. He walled off Wagner. I mean, Laken Tomlinson looked pretty good at left guard.
Yeah, I would just guess that I'd have to study him from there. Is they run a lot of outside zone with their smaller backs, Abdullah, and who's the other guy? And they got little backs that run. But the Niners run an outside zone scheme. So, you know, Martin Mayhew was the GM there when they drafted him. But I, honestly, when I look at the 49er running game, I don't think they're running as much outside zone.
No, we're
and
saying
I think
power.
They've adapted it to Carlos Hyde. And so if you want to run power, then we know Tomlinson can run power, and they got some big guys. I mean, Trent Brown's a monster at right tackle, one of the biggest tackles I've ever seen. So, and I would run power tonight and lean on 26 Mark Barron and try to run at him. But you got to get Aaron Donald blocked. But I think if the Rams are smart, they won't line him up over Tomlinson. Not that he can't get through Tomlinson, but that's more of a force on force matchup. You'd line him up over Fusco, or if Kilgore comes over to double, maybe they'll bring Trent Brown over. I don't know, but he's one of those guys. Even if you double team him, he's difficult to deal with. But the real concern for me in this game is the safety core for the Niners. Yeah. What if? Now, we know Eric Reed's not going to play. It's a PCL, posterior cruciate ligament. What if Ward and Tart both can't go? Why are you laughing?
Sure, because that's
Robert
trouble.
Robert Saleh's not laughing. He's crying.
He's not laughing. I'm laughing. They're thinking, dear God, what's
going to
happen?
Jerome?
Yeah, you're going to have to.
Send in Jerome?
Send in Jerome.
Can't run. They're going to run verticals. If they just have one of them, I think you can get by. Because Tart can play. He can play single high, or he can play in the box. Jimmy Ward can play only single high. You wouldn't bring him in the box. So if you have just one of the two, and is it the hamstring for Ward? He's still not able to get over that hamstring?
Yeah, it's the hamstring. I guess he had a setback up in Seattle and Tart. You know, I just don't know. I haven't seen any reports on it. I've been searching all day for updated news. I guess they're going to wait closer to
Tart's
game time.
Tart's got a neck.
He was laying the hat last week.
Well, they're
that's
not going to tell you till 4 o'clock. They don't have to tell you till 90 minutes before game time who's active, who's inactive. So, but if you have one or the other, I think you could get by with, you know, the linebacker they've been talking about playing more is Brock Coyle. I think what they would do with him is bring him inside, let him play the they had so many injuries in the linebacking level because you lost Malcolm Smith, you lost Reuben Foster, and, you know, Eric Reed was kind of filling in that area where he was down as a third linebacker inside with Ray Ray and Navarro Bowman. If you don't have one of the two, then you could play Coyle in the box with Bowman and then use Ray Ray as a safety. You could roam it around a little bit if you wanted to stay away from Lorenzo Jerome. I don't even know about it. Adrian Culver.
Yeah, nobody knows about him.
So, I mean, but if you don't have both, you got a problem. But you could play Coyle more inside and then have Ray Ray play more like Reed. But it's just going to be, I mean, and the one thing about the Rams is they can get up the seams. They got these two tight ends, Higbee and Everett. You know, they can run seam routes on you. And I think you'll see them do that anyway. If there's one weakness to the Niners, if they play a lot of cover three, you run four verticals. You know, kind of like the Raider touchdown against the Tennessee Titans was four verticals off of cover three. And the Rams could do that. I mean, they could run, you know, Cooper Kupp and Woods and Watkins or wherever, and then two of the tight ends could go up seams and they could press you. You know, the one matchup I think is going to be most intriguing. There's no question that Jared Goff's first look is to Cooper Kupp, right? Number 18.
Absolutely.
Kaywan Williams.
I was just going to bring that up.
He's not a bad player. I like him a lot.
He had a rough
slot. He can cover the nickel. He can cover that slot. He's not bad. I like him.
He had a rough first series in that Seattle game. He got beat. He missed a tackle on the first third down that Seattle converted on that drive. But he got aggressive as the game went on. He was everywhere. And it was obvious that Russell Wilson was looking to throw to whoever Kaywan Williams was covering. So that's where I was going to go next. That was the key matchup because Kaywan will be playing that slot receiver. So he's going to be asked to do a lot tonight. Kaywan's okay. He played better as the game went on.
What was the play where he missed the tackle? I forget. Who was it? Doug Baldwin?
No, it was a first series of the game. He missed it on the very first third down for Seattle. I believe it might have been C.J. Procise. I don't remember exactly who it was, but he missed the tackle. They get the first down.
Yeah,
he got
I'm talking
beat a couple
about him
times.
Covering. I mean, Procise is a back out of the backfield. That wouldn't be his assignment. I just think he covers, and they kind of let him play a little bit off. And it's different when you play a three deep and a four under. You know, when you have three receivers and you got to match up, because they don't typically do that. They let the linebackers kind of buzz that area. But if you are going to match up at a nickel, I like his skill set. But he's going to be in the crosshairs tonight because Cooper Kupp is the guy, Vontae. There's no doubt. Sammy Watkins is just, I don't think he's arrived in L.A. yet. I've seen him have some monster games in Buffalo. Robert Woods is what he is. He's a, you know, power slant runner, not great speed. He can catch the ball, use his big body. They've got the tight ends. They'll check to Gurley out of the backfield. But you got to take 18 away, even though it was only a rookie. Cooper Kupp is the guy Goff's trying to get the ball to. There's no doubt about it.
Absolutely. We saw that here week two of the preseason when the Rams played the Raiders at the Coliseum. Looking for the Niners D-line to put in another performance like they did up in Seattle. That'll be key as well. Can they get pressure on Jared Goff? But, Pop, we got a caboose pistol as we pay tribute to a Bay Area legend saying goodbye to us this morning. We'll discuss right here on the Greg Papa Show. I'm Vontae Hill, and this is 95.7 The Game.
Now it's time for the Caboose Pistol with Greg Popper in Bonte Hill on 95.7 The Game.
The Caboose Pistol.
The old Caboose Pistol.
A few stories that almost slipped through the cracks.
I know someone who could hide a machine gun in there.
Yeah. I like big...
Right now on the Afternoon Delights on 95.7 The Game.
You are the best pound-for-pound fighter in the world tonight. Is that important to you?
Of course it is, but I don't have a vote, and I keep saying that. So I got to keep my head down and keep working, and hopefully against a great fighter like Sergey Kovalev, we'll get our credit tonight, and hopefully we'll get atop that pound-for-pound list. And one more real quick, I just want to thank my wife, who doesn't get a lot of attention or a lot of shine. I could not do this over the last decade Without her, she's a wonderful mother, wonderful wife. Thank you, baby.
Is this the biggest win of your career?
What you think? You think so?
I think so.
I might agree with you.
I know you just had the biggest win of your career. Do you have any thoughts about the near future?
Maybe cruiserweight. I don't know.
You want another belt?
Maybe cruiserweight. I don't know. Cruiserweight, heavyweight, that's always been a dream of mine. Got to be against the right guy, but hey, man, I dream big, and anything is possible when you got God in your life.
There won't be another belt for Mr. Andre Ward, Triple G. Andre Ward announced today that he is going to retire from the game of boxing. Yes, the game, not the match. The game of boxing.
Boxing ain't a game.
Sweet science.
Sweet science. It's not a game.
33 and he's done?
He's done. But you know what, Pop? He can join you at NBC Sports Bay Area or something, because he has a nice... You know, he likes to be on TV. He likes to, you know, be in front of the camera.
He's very good on the
Triple G combinator.
Yeah, yes. He was on the Triple G Canelo fight on HBO.
That's right.
So he's very good. ESPN as well.
32 fights, 32 wins, 16 by knockout. Never lost a fight as a pro.
Never.
The last time he lost, he was like 14 years
13,
old.
14 years old, yeah, in the amateurs. Yeah,
he's just a kid.
Sad.
He was on the morning show today.
He was.
He bumped you, Pop. He bumped you out your time slot.
I'm not the son of God. I never.
But Andre Ward, there's no fights out there for him. I mean, who's he going to fight? There's no lucrative, big money fight. So why not?
Mayweather?
There's too much of a weight difference. Mayweather would never take that chance.
Oh, he should, though.
Mayweather would never take that chance. He is very calculated in who he fights.
Whatever. No, boxers never come out of retirement, do they?
No, yes.
I don't think this is the last we see of Andre Ward in a boxing ring. Yeah. But from everyone at 957 The Game, we give our best to Andre Ward. He's always been nice to us.
Absolutely.
But yeah, could you guys tell the music that I played underneath for Andre Ward there?
It was kind of heavy. What was that?
Yeah. It was maybe a little too heavy. I apologize. That is the theme.
Like, is Andre okay? I'm going to check.
That is the theme to Raging Bull. And the Raging Bull himself, Jake LaMotta.
I see what you did there.
Jake LaMotta passed away at the age of 95 yesterday. Actually,
greatest sports film ever by far, right?
I don't know if it's, is it more a sports movie, or is it more about a guy just kind of going crazy?
It's
and
a great film.
No, it's a great film, but it's a little
is
heavy.
Scorsese's best work, would you say?
No. Goodfellas.
Eight Academy Awards or something like
that? Well, Robert De Niro won Best Actor. Yeah. And he had to fluctuate his weight so much. He went from being really skinny as a boxer.
60 pounds.
Yeah, he got really fat at the end. He actually went to Italy to just eat. But, Raging Bull, I don't know if it's the greatest sports movie of all time, just because it doesn't focus more on boxing. It focuses more
on Jake LaMotta's life.
Jake LaMotta was just a crazy and kind of a terrible human being, to be honest.
He was tough on his wife.
He was extremely tough. Extremely.
I think it's by far the greatest sports
movie. Did you stoop my wife, huh?
I know.
Yeah, I have to think if it's the greatest sports film ever. I'm not 100% sure about that.
It's one of the top five films ever made.
No, it's a great movie.
Great movie. Absolutely.
I just don't know if it's a great sports movie. Like Rocky, I think, is a better sports movie.
Yeah, it's about Jake LaMotta.
Yeah.
He was a boxer.
Yeah. All right. So have you guys ever been in a situation where you've just been like, you know, maybe even doing the show and you just need to get some alcohol, but you don't want to be seen having the alcohol, so you got to find a way to sneak it in?
Well, you just put it under the desk.
Yeah, I know. There's that, but there's also like sporting events or like occasions or maybe like a funeral where you just want to like
have a flask.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, in
Jake
flasks.
LaMotta's funeral, I want to do that. Yeah.
Why do you ask? Well, you don't need a flask anymore. All you need is a dad bag. And what I mean by that is...
The dad bag.
So the dad bag, created by Albert Pukies, is a device, kind of like a fanny pack.
Real name.
Yeah. Kind of like a fanny pack where it looks like actual flesh of, you know, kind of like your exposed belly.
A big gut.
A big beer belly.
I would say a boiler.
A boiler, yes. A full tummy that is exposed from your midriff. So
very attractive.
Exactly. Very attractive. So you put that on over your stomach, and that contains a little zip pouch where you can put your shots or your alcohol, so no one's the wiser. You can look like
marsupial. You're a marsupial.
Exactly. So you can put all your beer in there. You can put all your alcohol, and you just walk around with your gut
whatever
out.
Whatever you want.
And they have different kinds for the dad bag. You can wear the Allen. You can
the
wear
Derek.
The Derek. Yes. Derek.
What is the Derek?
The Derek's a black belly.
They're all innies.
Yes. They're all innies.
They're all innies.
I don't see any outies here.
No outies.
The Magnus.
Seen a picture of that? The Sherman is an ugly one.
Oh, the Sherman's just a hairy
Who's
belly.
The Sherman is a hairy belly.
The Wolfgang is a sunburned belly.
But Wolfgang Puck?
Yeah, but here's the problem. So Albert Pukies has this device.
Pukies.
And he's telling people about it before he actually has a, you know, a company to help him out, so people will know about this thing before it goes on sale. So it'll be like, you know, you wear it and people will call you out like, is that your real stomach or is that just a dad bag? So I don't know.
Albert Pukies. What if you are a dad and you got the boiler already and you put the dad bag over the dad bag?
Well, then you have like you have people like actually touching your gut and you're like, oh, that's kind of weird.
Then you're like 28 weeks pregnant.
Right. So you're looking like refrigerator Perry or something.
You're already showing. How adorable.
So not a smart move by Albert Pukies, but I hope to attain.
Albert Pukies.
Albert Pukies with a dad bag.
What if you pukied in the dad bag? Would that work?
Well, I mean, you could use it as a...
Save it for later.
Exactly. People wear it on airplanes. They just use it as that. So Michael Lombardi is now going into acting, as we talked about with him. He's on the HBO terrible show Ballers.
Whoa.
And let's listen to his... It's terrible. Let's listen.
You should have played it for Michael. Why didn't we play it?
I know, I forgot about it, but let's listen to it now.
Belichick wanted to come, but he's stuck in Nantucket.
Guess you want to first look to make sure I ain't speaking in tongues and smearing feces on the wall. Huh?
Brady does it all the time. That wouldn't keep us from putting you on the field. We got a two-year deal, $20 million total, 10 per year, 16 guaranteed. Just need you to sign here.
Go ahead and sign, Rick.
I have a concussion.
So you're not bipolar?
I'm that too, but I'm taking the medication.
So bipolar with a concussion, that's uncharted territory. Look, I really appreciate you being up front with us.
Well, it'd be good for me to see the team doc, right? I want to get proper medical attention. I'm not trying to rush on the field.
Absolutely. Why don't I step outside? I'll make that phone call right now.
Sounds good.
Is he taking off?
Yeah. Be a good guess.
Oh, come on, Lombardi.
Flip that for Michael next week. He was terrific.
He was awesome.
But apparently they had him play the Patriots GM.
Well, he kind of was for a while.
A little bit. But like, and then they like, would that ever happen if a player just like grew a conscience and said like, I have a concussion, and the GM just leaves like that?
I can't imagine a player admitting that.
Yeah, exactly.
Hey, I'm bipolar, I have a concussion.
And that's why Ballers
20 million.
Yeah, that's why Ballers is such a ridiculous show. None of the things that actually happen on the show actually happen in reality.
Hopefully not.
Michael seemed to go along with it.
Michael loved it. He looked good.
It was a payday for Michael.
It was good. I wonder how much they get paid for a little cameo like that. Yeah. 10 seconds.
Yeah, maybe.
We'll ask him next week. Let's ask him next week.
Gentlemen, have you ever heard of, we hear about inmates breaking out of prison all the time, but do you hear about inmates breaking out of prison just to go back to prison? Let's take a listen.
A bizarre crime where four inmates have been accused of breaking out of the Holmes-Humphreys County Correctional Facility, burglarizing a business, then sneaking right back in jail. Patrice Clark has the very latest on this investigation.
I don't want to be on no camera. Travis Baker, Levante Ellington, and Maurice Robertson let it be known Tuesday that they were not happy to see our cameras.
Gang.
The police say last week the inmates, along with Jaquez Williams, allegedly escaped their cell, jumped the fence of this jail, and then walked less than a mile to this Dollar General. Now, here's some surveillance video from that night.
They stole cigarettes, cigarette lighters, cell phones, and that's items that they feel like that they can sell in jail.
Now, after grabbing the items out of the store, the chief says instead of them making a run for it, they snuck back in jail unnoticed. Jaquez Williams even bonded out for another charge.
Already in jail, but you want to break out and break back in jail. You know, that's just something I heard it all.
Hey, did you guys break into the Dollar General?
No.
What is the Shawshank Redemption where Morgan Freeman's like, I just found ways to go back to prison?
It's so odd. Where do you find this stuff? Where are these people?
It's ridiculous.
They just needed cigs and a cigarette lighter to bribe the screws. That's all they needed.
All right, guys, that's your Caboose Pistol. We'll be on tomorrow from 10 to 1 from the Warriors Media Day.
I got to wake up early.
Yeah, and I think Raymond Ritter asked us not to do a truth machine, so there won't be a truth machine tomorrow.
There'll be no truth machine?
Unfortunately not.
Why would he ask that? We were going to put Raymond through the truth
machine. Actually, I was planning on putting Kevin Durant in about this tweet, but I guess we're not allowed to talk about this.
That's probably a good idea not to do this truth machine.
Save it for next week.
Yeah.
Oh, yes, please, Katie, throw him in there.
All right, guys, that's your Caboose Pistol.
And that is it for... the Papa's not it for me, because Damon Bruce and myself will be here for the next 4 hours right here on 95.7 The Game.